When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at remarkable.com today.
Watching any sport is a hell of a lot more exciting when you got a little something-something riding on the game. But what happens when the season is over? At MyBookie, there is no off-season. NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, boxing, heck, table tennis, MMA, and more. If they got it, you can bet it. If the games are being played, the line is on the board at MyBookie. Just remember, where you bet, though, is every bit as important, if not more so than what you're betting on. That's why I tell all my friends to go to mybookie.ag. Oh, but my state just approved it. There's a big whatever, or these guys are in the market. Nah, Johnny come latelys. You want to trust them? Trust the bookie I've been working with for years, MyBookie. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does it matter? Oh, I don't know. Maybe a million reasons. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. You name it. Plus, you get a bonus with me at mybookie.ag. Use promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. That's promo code ZABE. And get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. You bet, you win, and most importantly, you get paid with mybookie.ag. Today's ZABEcast was recorded on the rooftop of Central Standard Distillery in downtown Milwaukee. Central Standard is an award-winning distiller of fine spirits, from its signature Red Cabin bourbon whiskey to ready-made cocktails like the popular Old Fashioned in a can in either brandy or whiskey. Or you can taste some Fly the L whiskey to rub it in the face of Cub fans. Their craft house and kitchen also features an intimate, light dining atmosphere, which is perfect for after-hours get-togethers with friends or colleagues. I had the chance to sit down with Cold Ones on the table and talk all things baseball with former Brewer pitcher Tim Dillard and my co-worker Drew Olson from 97.3 The Game.
And to drive down the ratings at every outlet I touch.
All right, perfect. All right, boys, cheers.
Cheers.
Is this mine right here, by the way?
That's you. Yeah. That's you. I'm finishing my patio.
Yeah, I'm gee, Tim, can you have another beer, or is that against, you know, broadcast?
Oh,
you can
have
beer. Well, as long as we're not recording. No, yeah, I got to drive it. I got a 16-year-old. He knows what's up.
I did research on your boy, Timmy Dillard.
Oh, my.
For Olson.
All right.
Because I had to get up to speed. I was like, okay.
The man, the myth, the legend.
I know the basic shape of his pitching career. But I never knew. Now, if Wikipedia is half correct.
Probably not.
Which it usually is. You started as a catcher.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
That's wild.
Well, yeah. And he's forgetting the lineage. The son of a big leaguer.
Well, that's so the other thing. Your dad,
son
Steve.
Of a big leaguer,
son
yeah.
Of a big son of a big leaguer. Your dad, Steve, played in the majors for who again?
Came up with the Red Sox. He was part of that 75 team,
they
which they just celebrated earlier this year. They brought all the remaining people that were there.
50th Dwight anniversary
Evans was there.
Of,
50th
oh my God,
anniversary. Carlton
great.
Fisk, Carl Yastrzemski, Fred Lynn. I mean, sadly lost Louis Tiant, but yeah, he got in with the Red Sox and it was Tigers, and then he got traded over to the Cubs because they had two no-name guys, Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell.
Yeah,
probably
heard
never
of
heard of them.
Not
yeah,
a big
never
deal. Heard of them. Not a big
but
deal.
My dad had some good years with the Cubs. He actually got Player of the Month or something like that one time with the Cubs.
But he got a plaque.
Yeah, I got a plaque on a bat.
Somewhere.
Like, that's what I remember growing up. I was like, there's this huge bat. And I was like, I wanted to go swing it. My dad's like, let's don't swing that one. And it had a little plaque on it saying he was player of the week or month or whatever it was. And his last year was with the White Sox, 82. Once that was done, they said, retire, and we want you to be a coach. So I wasn't born yet. I was about to be born. We moved to Florida. So I was born in Sarasota, raised in Bradenton, and Baseball is all I know. That and Star Wars trivia. So.
Oh, well, we can.
Is this a Star Wars podcast?
It will be.
We can do a little bit of that later.
Yeah, right.
Drew, we're at your favorite place, also my favorite place, Central Standard Distillery right here.
Yes.
Yep. Next to the 794 Highway Interchange, Interstate, I guess, connects basically down by the lakefront, out to the ballpark. Out to Madison
it's the
here.
Place. Take a good look at it because they're endeavoring to tear this down and
make
it a surface
street. Oh, I've
seen
the plans. I'm like, it's going to cost $800 million. And I'm like, no, it's not. It'll cost triple that.
There was a freeway
It'll
like this.
Forever.
There was a freeway like this over by Fiserv that they tore down, and it's the land sat empty forever. And then the Bucks finally built Fiserv, and they're starting to develop it now after 25 years.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Just
but 25
anyway, years, though?
Yeah.
Central Standard, proud sponsor of 97 Through the Game and your show in the afternoon and also me in the morning. And, they are great in terms of all of their wonderful whiskeys and bourbons and all their concoctions.
Bourbon, rye, Guided Trail gin, standard issue vodka. The ready-to-pour line is amazing. They collaborate with Line and Kugels. They got the canned old fashions, the canned rocket pop, which is like delicious and dangerous.
A canned old fashioned.
It's delicious. Bourbon and brandy.
This, right.
Wow.
They use the fruit from the Shandy line that Line and Kugels. So it's Line and Kugels and Central Standard in a can.
Yeah.
Shandy line?
Yeah.
Is that like a...
The summer shandy,
like,
shandy line, the summer shandies, and the
peach.
Right. They use all the fruits from there. So these guys got it on point. They're opening a place, a spinoff of the Craft House and Kitchen at the airport. So Terminal C, they're gonna have a Craft House and Kitchen. You can get their delicious drinks there. It's gonna be awesome.
I love it. So I'm with two baseball men. Perfect. Tim is now with the Brewers broadcast crew with FanDuel, and Drew. You used to write for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You were the head of the Baseball Writers of America. You wrote Brewers. Stories for how many years?
12, I guess.
And how many winning seasons in the 12? Two?
Probably zero.
Zero?
Yeah, zero. That was during the window when they didn't
this
win.
This guy.
Wow.
I saw some bad ball.
The worst of the worst.
Mm-hmm.
And now the team is...
I was
a
still
hug.
Around it.
You need
but
a hug.
I covered the 106 loss season. The only 100 loss season in Brewers history. I covered that.
Oh, it just had to be brutal. And now it's a
but
young,
it's not,
exciting team. That has made the playoffs how many years in a row, counting the pandemic year?
Six out of seven.
Six out of seven. Got young stars like Jackson Chourio. Another young star coming up tomorrow night in Jacob Mizrowski.
Yeah.
6-7, throws allegedly 103, Tim.
Allegedly?
Okay.
I saw him pitch last year, so they were experimenting him in AAA at the bullpen as possible. They thought he was going to get called up last year to come out of the bullpen throwing 100 and whatever, and he was good. And honestly, it may have helped hit his stride where he can apply that kind of mentality to the starting rotation because what he's done in AAA so far. And I was talking to some of the coaches one day, and I'm like, you got to be careful because if you have a guy like this that is that good and tearing up AAA, the worst thing you can do is let him keep throwing in AAA.
Because
guys will start going, okay, well, what I'm doing here is not good enough. And that's how pitchers think. I got to do something different.
Oh, you think it'd get in Jacob's head?
Not so much.
Possibly.
Not so much like in the dome. He's probably not a domesman. It's more like, well, clearly what I'm doing is not working. Even though my numbers are good, I'm not getting called up. I was like, there's a fine line there. And you have to have some feel where you're like, okay, this is the time to do it. I probably would have called him up a couple weeks ago just because I like it when young guys come up and you get to see what you have. But it's going to be a treat. Hopefully everybody comes up.
It's
and
energizing
shows up and
to the team. It's a clubhouse.
Oh,
everybody
yeah.
will be excited for him.
Right.
Everybody's going to be like, I watch Freddy Peralta tomorrow night. He'll be at the top step.
Yep.
I bet he talks to him like in between innings. If
Every
if
time.
Miz is wired that way.
And how nervous do you think Miz will be making his big league debut? How
well, he was here today,
you?
Right?
Yeah, he was
I was
here.
Nervous. Okay. I don't even remember it. It was so long ago, and I had no idea what was going on.
But it has to be.
I remember it.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker, Tim, for the little viral videos of kids, of young players getting the call up. And
oh,
they're
yeah.
doing this now more in social media. There's a kid for the Mariners.
Yeah, well.
Where the manager says, all right, I'll see you, you know, have a good game tomorrow in Seattle. He's like, where?
What?
Huh?
Yeah.
What? And then he's crying.
Miz had the story that is classic for the time. They called him and he thought it was spam and didn't answer.
That's pretty relevant nowadays.
That's how everybody
here's what
is.
Here's what I learned. When I was like in AA, AAA, if a 414 number popped up on my phone, you better answer that thing.
Right.
Now, listen,
I bought it.
But if you're in the big leagues and you get a 414, be like,
voicemail.
Nope.
Voicemail.
I made the mistake of answering a couple of those 414s.
Oh, yeah, that's not good.
Yeah.
It's the GM's call entirely to bring a guy up, or is it a consultation with the minor league manager, the pitching coach, the owner, maybe the major league manager? How does that work?
I think they're very collaborative. They really try to get insight in every facet, and they probably, a lot of this prep work has already been done before the decision's made. And it has to do with who do we want to start which day. And so they have a big whiteboard, they marker everything in. We have this guy for this day, we have this guy for this day. And then you have to, contingencies. Well, what if this happens? What if this happens? And so for whatever reason, they thought it's going to be Mizorowski for Thursday.
And I think they shortened up his last two outings a little bit. Like they kind of like,
maybe
in terms of pitches and stuff. And he's pitching on his day. So he pitched Saturday, so Saturday, Thursday.
Yeah.
So he's on his regular day that he would be pitching, which is also interesting because once he's here, Brewers like to give guys that extra day whenever they can around a day off. They like to slide him.
Yeah.
And I really well with him too.
Yeah. I really think it's cool how they've been pulling guys up, not just to start that day, but get them in the dugout, get them in the clubhouse to let them hang out and talk and get the lay of the land, because there's so many times. Like, I got called up. We were in Washington, D.C., and I showed up about the time the broadcast truck was showing up, the last bus. So, like, the first person I saw in the big leagues I recognized was Bob Uecker. Like, he gets off the bus.
Wow.
I'm wearing a suit. I'm sweating through this suit. And he was just like, I forgot how he said it, but he was like, you look a little, like, rattled. You know? I got dropped off by a cab on the wrong side of the stadium, and here I am huffing and puffing. You know, and so I was rushed.
Was that the old stadium? Was that RFK?
No, that was a brand-new billion-dollar stadium.
Were you carrying your equipment?
I was carrying my own equipment and trying to wear a suit because I thought that's what you're supposed to do, right? Like, AAA, you're supposed to carry a suit in just case you get called up. And I thought I was doing everything right, and maybe I was, maybe I wasn't, but I go on the field, play catch, and then the game's starting. I change into my game jersey, and I'm out in the bullpen, and like fifth, sixth inning, they're like, get Dillard going. I'm like, what? Like, already? Like, I just got here. What am I doing? And I went out there, pitched, did okay. But having guys get here and get a lay of the land, I think that really helped Logan Henderson. Before he started, he was here for like 5 days. That has to help to understand what is going on, get the flow of everything. Even one day would have been great, but you know what? Even if it was a last-second thing, a guy's going to make his debut. It's awesome.
That's with position guys. That was one thing Council would do. You got there, even if it was an all-night travel, and you get there, it's like you're going in, or even would start you.
He wouldn't baby you.
You came here to play, and it's like that alleviates some nerves too. You're like too wired to worry about where you're at, right?
Sure.
It's like, boom. Your head is swimming.
Get it over with.
Well, position players are different. I mean, in the way that they're used to playing every day. One of the worst things that a big league club can do is call up a guy that's doing really well in AAA, like hitting at the plate and defensively, and then just sit him on the bench for like a week. That's the worst thing you can do.
Just go cold.
You call those guys up, get them right in the lineup.
That was the theory. Phil Garner used to say that to me all the time. Why do we go get the guy who's on a hot streak in AAA? Give me the guy who's 0 for 20 because he's about to get hot.
Dude,
we got this guy that's hitting 500, and he's going to come up here and he's going to suck.
That's how I got called up. They were like, this guy right here hadn't gotten anybody out. Good, he's due.
Good, he's due. Get him in here.
He's burnt all his bad pitching up in the minors.
He's about to get somebody out.
I love it. So Mizorowski can throw 103 in late innings, and they say he's got real good stuff. So he's not just a flat 103, he can bring it. So I wanted to start with, how do you look at the state of the art for pitching nowadays, overall? Everyone says velos are up, spin rates are up. It's a different ball game now.
It is. Who knows if I would have had a job at this juncture, but a lot of times my job was because everybody else either couldn't go deep into a ball game or there was injuries. I was always just a just-in-case guy. But not everybody's a just-in-case guy. Some guys are just built, ready for this. Their bodies can handle it. You're looking at like Paul Skeens. Like, that's kind of the comparison we're talking about, a guy that can throw 100 over the course of 6-7 innings.
Yeah.
That's unheard of. Like, no one's really doing that. So the guys that are proven that can do that over multiple seasons, it's a pretty special thing. I mean, you look at Aroldis Chapman, he stays healthy, but he's only pitching one inning.
Right.
Now you got these guys that can go 6 or 7. It's a game changer, but it's not the norm. But they do exist. That's the thing. They do exist. But to think that me or the player over there can do that, you may train that way. You may not get the results that you want. That's probably why you see injuries, through the roof like they've been for the past 10 years.
That's the issue. The more you talk to people, is the game better than it was maybe not. The kid from the Braves pitched the complete game today. Yeah. Last year in the major leagues, I looked it up, there were 26 complete games in the entire major leagues.
Yeah, Tim was saying that before he came.
And Bob Gibson had 28 in his highest season, 28 himself.
Have the analytics nerds done any math on whether it makes sense to not let guys go for complete games?
Let them go three times through the order. You kind of got to get 27 outs. You kind of got to face everything.
I'm not sure that's their job, though. Their job is how can we maximize and win a ball game? Maximize their stuff. Maximize the potential to have the best pitcher on the mound against whoever's up in the lineup later in the ball game when it might matter. It's hard
but
to keep guys healthy.
But it's a strategy to not let guys go the full game, basically, right? My question is,
not even a strategy when guys can't do it and aren't conditioned to do it.
Oh, you're saying
in
they
the minor
now.
Leagues. I'm saying,
I was going to say, has anyone tested the strategy? How do we know the strategy is right?
Here's the thing that's come around.
We wouldn't know until we had an A-B comparison of same pitchers going an extra inning or two to complete games.
25 years ago, they were talking about, and this was back when guys would, and you had like three guys on a staff going 200 innings, which is unheard of now. Yeah. Last year, there were four guys in the entire big leagues gave 200 innings. That used to be the baseline for your average starter. We want 200 innings out of you.
Yeah.
Like your number three guy had to give you 200 innings. Now, nobody does.
Is that why velos and spin rates are up? Because they can throw harder.
Part of it is the max effort, but the idea was radical at the time was let's start using an opener. Like, let's get the first three games, the low leverage innings with the bullpen, and then if Clayton Kershaw can only go six innings, why don't we want him in the ninth when we want our best pitcher on the mound in the high leverage innings? So the idea, Doug Melvin said this in 2000, he's like, we should be starting the game out of the pen and then have our starters go at the end of the game rather than flipping it.
Isn't that still relatively rare?
It's totally rare. No one's really doing it on occasion, but no one's doing it as a matter of course.
Well, to me, it starts at the top. What do you want for your minor leagues? If you start it now in the big leagues, it's not going to work. These guys are not prepped. Their bodies are not ready to go deeper into ball games. It's a gradual increase, but you can't just throw 100 innings in the minor leagues every year and expect to go 200 innings in the big leagues. It's not going to happen.
Right.
Very rare. So the thing to do would be if you really feel like this guy's going to be a starter, then you need to let him start. You need to let him pitch until his pitch count runs out, which I don't even know why we stop at 100, honestly.
They get the number that they're now going by? What is the magic pitch count number? Is it 100?
It's for the most part.
Where did they get that?
For the most part.
I asked in 2005, I asked my pitching coach, Fred Dabney, I was like, why is it 100 pitches? And he got in my face and was like, because all of our bosses said that. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
That's the fucking number.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, that was what came down because there was times I was a sinker baller, so I didn't strike a lot of people out, didn't walk a lot of people. I was like, here, hit it. Single, okay, here, double play. Here, single, okay, here, pop up. Like, I'm out of the inning. I don't care if they hit it. I'm trying to get them to hit it, especially if I have a good defense.
Right.
So for me, especially in 2005, I think I led all of baseball in innings as far as minor league baseball through like 185 innings. I doubt too many minor leaguers have done that since. But I had to negotiate. There was games where I'm throwing a gem. I'm in the seventh. I got 77 pitches. And my pitching coach is like, we're taking you out. And I'm like, why? I was like, I can finish this game. And they're like, no. They're like, you've had too many up downs. I'm like, I'm throwing the exact same amount of pitches if it's 100 as these other guys that are going five innings.
What's an up down?
What's like, come up.
Come up, get three outs, go sit down in the dugout, come back out.
That's bad?
That's what they're...
Yeah, there's all these studies of, like, how many times you go and then get back hot again and get batters out, then go down and sit and then come back. So they call them up-downs, but...
All right.
It's innings. It's, like, the in-between inning. Yeah.
So how many times, Tim, did you turn your manager away successfully or your pitching coach away at the mound to stay in the game?
Well, I had to negotiate.
What was your negotiating percentage?
Yeah, so I was like...
50-50?
Well, I was like...
90-10?
I would be like, give me 110 pitches, and then next game you can give me just 90. You're right. So I would finish the game or get deeper into the game, or they take me out.
You're stealing pitches from future games.
Yeah, and then 5 days later, I'm like, I'm at 85 pitches. Yeah, and I'm like, all right, let me go 15, 20 more, and then you can take them from the next one.
The flip side of that is, though, like, we got to get this guy in the eighth because we got to get these guys working. And they might call this guy up, and we want to see him
face
these guys.
That was an A-ball. I was doing this in A-ball. And in AA, I had a couple of complete games maybe. In AAA, maybe one or two or five maybe in my career. I have no idea. But at the AAA level, you're not a priority anymore because you do have these bullpen pieces that have to pitch or a rehab guy that has to pitch. So you start looking, where are these innings at? And instead of looking for where these innings are at, they're like, well, we'll just throw less and they'll be fine. I think guys need to throw again. What I was saying earlier, Clayton Kershaw was on a similar interview type thing in spring training, and he accidentally said, like, yeah, I think the Dodgers are going to go back to throwing more, like wanting their pitchers to throw more, because they were the first to do less. And now all of a sudden they have more injuries than anybody.
The analogy is with football, that they don't wear pads, they don't tackle, they don't hit, they don't take people to the ground, and they got more injuries than they used to. They don't practice it in training camp. It's like the guys, it's so funny because I've seen it now through a generation where when I first started covering shit, the older players like, these guys, it's a country club, Jesus Christ. And now the guys who were playing in that country club are looking and go, God, this is unbelievable.
It is.
Like, because a generation ago, like you talked to Kuhn, and those, when he first got in the NFL, they were doing 3-a-days in camp, in pads. They would do a morning practice, a noon of special teams practice, and then an afternoon practice. And if you were on special teams, you were practicing 3 times a day.
Oh, my God. Wow.
And nowadays, it's like, no way. So every generation's like, these guys, it's a country club. What's going on out there?
To baseball's
point. But it hasn't helped the health. Yeah. Guys are still getting hurt. Baseball, we're coddling the pitchers more than ever, and they're getting hurt as much as they ever did.
And it starts in spring training. Like, I remember I came back to spring training one time, and they're like, yeah, you can go home. Like, after we did practice and everything, I was like, what? I was like, don't we have to go out and, like, do some more stuff? They're like, no, man, we abbreviated everything. And I remember that was the first time I was like, this is too easy. Back in the day, spring training was a grind. You couldn't do anything else. You get back to the hotel, team hotel, at, like, 5 o'clock, and you had to go to bed. You're wiped out. You've been out there all day. And then finally at the end of spring training, they go, hey, you made whatever team. You made double-A team. You made triple-A. Hey, you made the big leagues. You have done so much over 6 weeks. You are exhausted. But right in that moment, you realize everything's about to get better because you're about to play a ton of night games, and you're going to do half the workload that you just went through.
And so, sleep
so
until
like
when?
Vacation.
But now they have offloaded everything so much, so the days in spring training are easier than their days out here playing.
True.
And to me, it's absurd. I don't know why that's, but every team has adopted that. That's how it's been going.
Are Tommy John injuries up? Do we know that? Is there a tracker on that? I know Corbin Burns just went down for the Diamondbacks. That
Corbin Burns is a guy who never, other than a COVID and a strained oblique, had never had been hurt.
Yeah,
nothing on the Carfax report for him. And then it just goes. I have a buddy who's convinced that the pitch clock has added to arm injuries. Convinced. Now, I know Major League Baseball, the PA, has said, we've looked at it, it's not a factor. Yeah. But I'm like, you're pitching more pitches in a tighter time frame. How can that not be more stressful?
Well, look at the guys that throw 100. They throw a pitch because they're max effort. They're not just, you know, here it is. They're like max effort. And then they walk around the mound, or they'll get another ball. They'll throw it away because they have to have that time. Like, there's studies out there. You have to have a ratio of force exerted and then seconds to rest. They've taken that away. I think it's contributed. But Dr. Meister at Arlington, who's done probably the better research than anybody, he's doing all the surgeries, all the shoulder, all the elbows. He has been doing his own research of, like, when a guy comes in to get looked at, he says, here's a ball, show me your grips, tell me what pitches you throw. He wants to know how they train. He wants to know what they're trying to do, all this stuff. And he's compiled a lot of data. When he comes out with his whatever he's going to do, it is going to be groundbreaking. But he was on the Foul Territory podcast show.
Yep.
Yeah.
Sure. I don't know. If it's still on the internet, got to check it out. It's the best, probably, like, 9 minutes of explaining this that I've ever heard. I can't even do it justice.
Nice.
I don't know why it's not a bigger deal.
So he's like the new Dr. Job.
Maybe. Or Dr. Andrews. But there's a philosophy behind it.
He's with Tom House, was the guru of throw footballs and throw weighted ball, like shot puts, throw.
Yeah,
like,
really?
Yeah, oh yeah. Tom House was the pitcher for big league.
Weighted balls. That seemingly
would
tear your arm apart.
You would think. But his guys swear by his
method. That was the guy that, you know, he helped Nolan Ryan. And honestly, one day I was training. I live in Nashville. I was training with R.A. Dickey, a knuckleball pitcher. We were teammates in 07. He says, hey, come up to this facility. We'll work out together and play catch. And the guy's a beast. Like, it's almost like he should have done something else, because knuckleball, you think, oh, this guy's out of shape. R.A. Dickey was like, he's still well put together. He can bicycle. He can swim.
Naturally.
He's never had, like, an injury in his life type of guy.
Wow.
But he was the one that goes, we're going to throw the NFL, the Duke, football every day. That's what we're going to do in the offseason.
Fascinating.
So I'd never really done that. Started training with the football. I am convinced. Now, once the season starts, taper off the football. You see it out there on the field everywhere we go. Guys are out there throwing the football. I don't think you should do that, but off season, throw the football.
Let me ask you this, because in the olden times, in spring training, you'd see pitchers, they'd finish their four innings, and then they'd go run foul poles. And up. Do they do
during
as much cardio? Yeah, during the game, they would run
cardio,
in the outfield.
Yeah, they do some cardio.
They still do the same thing. But I see guys with the football combining it where they're running routes and throwing to each other, and that's their running. So they're getting the running in. Because I always joke with Paul Wagner, our buddy, and he used to have to run foul poles like constantly. It was like, what are we? Are we training for a marathon?
Yeah, it's tough.
He knows what that's what they used to do. I remember one day, the first day of camp, Dave Stewart was the Brewers pitching coach for like 1 year under Davey Lopes. And he had everybody run a mile. All the pitchers had to run a mile for time. And Ruben Quevedo, may he rest in peace. Ruben Quevedo. You remember the scene in Bad News Bears when Engelbert stops and eats the chocolate bar? He couldn't finish the mile. And I'm like, I am in better shape than a professional athlete because I can run a mile. And I think they had to run it like 9 minutes or 10. Like, it was not.
It was a fitness test,
but it was like, it was sad to see. But those guys used to run foul poles, and that's not, we don't see it in public anymore. Maybe they're doing treadmill stuff. Maybe they're
I mean, there's different things.
Stuff.
Guys are, they're doing.
It's not a conditioning issue, though, is the thing. It's not.
Well, I mean, there's a way to train. If you're a starter, you want to be able to build up. You could jog a long time. Real no sense in doing too many sprints. You want to be able to, you know, keep your heart rate down and function over a long course of time. If you're a bullpen guy, it's a lot of sprints. You want to be dynamic because you want to come out full throttle, and then you don't have to pitch a long time. Hey, here's one inning, I'm done. Like, you want to have that heart rate. So there's a different ways to train. I think it's just everybody's training too much in a way that's not specific to baseball. Personally, I've seen guys doing some weird stuff, and I'm like, why would you do that?
Why are you bench pressing?
What's the weirdest thing you've seen a guy do?
Well, I mean, I'm not a huge proponent of, like, the weighted balls. I had a friend of mine that was older in age, maybe, comparatively, when you talk about the minor leagues, and he wanted to revamp himself. I was asked to do it. I was like, no, I'm going to steer clear. And this guy did it, ended up blowing out his arm, like breaking his arm, basically, from throwing this stuff.
Dave Trevecki-ing himself.
Mm. Yeah, but there's guys out there that do something that maybe they shouldn't be doing, and it leads to injuries. But there's other guys that swear by it.
Yeah.
You know, you see the training, you see the Paul Skeens with, like, that water jug, and he's getting ready for a game or whatever he's doing out there.
Whatever he's doing, it's working.
It's working.
Except he's got a shit team around him. Poor guy. Had seven games, and he was, like, a 1.2 ERA, and he won one of them.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, him and, is it Keller? They're, like, leading baseballing, like, quality starts.
Yeah.
And yet they're not even
500. Gotta be frustrating. By the way, I want to make the knuckleball make a comeback. The knuckleball is such a sick thing, and nobody
has
it. Talk about a dark art that is now lost.
Then you wouldn't need position guys to pitch in blowout games because you just bring in the knuckleballer because he can throw all the time.
That was the reason I had a job for a while. I was like, don't do the knuckleball, just let me throw. Like, I can throw. I've been given the gift. I can just take a baseball and throw it. And that's all I
would. Ground balls.
Yeah, I can throw a baseball. I can throw tomorrow. I can throw the next day. That's my gift. Guys are not leaning into their gift as much anymore. They're trying to change that into something different.
But the knuckleball is...
Knuckleball's awesome.
It's awesome, but it's a wild chimera that cannot be tamed for the most part. Yeah. Only a few guys, like Tim Wakefield was one of the last real guys that used it, right, in the majors.
R.A. Dickey.
And R.A. Dickey.
Cy Young in 2012. Yeah. He was ready to quit baseball in 07. The only reason he took a job with the Brewers because he was in Nashville and he lives in Nashville. So he was like, here's my last hurrah. Guy went on to pitch like seven more years with Cy Young.
The only guys I see playing throwing knuckleballs now are position guys messing around playing
screwing
catch.
Around. Usually catchers.
Catchers and, like, well, infielders, and, like, guys are screwing around.
Yeah. I told my dad when I was five, I was like, hey, I want to be a catcher. And he goes, okay, you got to know two things. You got to know how to restring a glove and throw a knuckleball. And I just was like, yeah, that makes sense. Okay. I have no idea what that means, but now looking back, every catcher can throw a good knuckleball. Yeah. I don't know why, but
they all do it.
They can do it, and they can restring gloves.
You've heard the saying a million times, the best offense is a good defense. But these words of wisdom extend far beyond sports. In life, the best defense is making sure your life insurance policy is right for you. That's why I go to SelectQuote for the best coverage at the best price. Now that's what I call a power play. For over 40 years, SelectQuote has been one of the most trusted brokers in insurance, helping more than 2 million Americans secure over $700 billion in coverage. Their mission is simple, to find you the right insurance policy for your unique needs. They shop, you save. Get the right life insurance for you for less and save more than 50% at selectquote.com/Zabe. Save more than 50% on term life insurance at selectquote.com/Zabe today to get started. That's selectquote.com/Zabe.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except for thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility. With digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
Watching any sport is a hell of a lot more exciting when you got a little something-something riding on the game. But what happens when the season is over? At my bookie, there is no off-season. NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, boxing, heck, table tennis, MMA, and more. If they got it, you can bet it. If the games are being played, the line is on the board at my bookie. Just remember, where you bet, though, is every bit as important, if not more so than what you're betting on. That's why I tell all my friends to go to mybookie.ag. Oh, but my state just approved it. There's a big whatever, or these guys are in the market. Nah, Johnny come latelys. You want to trust them? Trust the bookie I've been working with for years, MyBookie. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does it matter? Oh, I don't know. Maybe a million reasons. Better lines, better payouts, less rules. You name it. Plus, you get a bonus with me at mybookie.ag. Use promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. That's promo code Zabe. And get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code Zabe to claim the offer. You bet, you win, and most importantly, you get paid with mybookie.ag.
All right, I got a couple of one word or one phrase questions. Spider tech.
Can't use it anymore.
Don't hear much about it anymore.
I mean, they
was it that much of an advantage?
Or honestly, was it a bit overhyped? Honestly, I never saw anybody use it. The worst thing I ever saw, and it's not even that bad, what guys would like, before they would take the field, they would just grab like some old pine tar on someone's bat that's like sitting there. They'd be like, that right there.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah. And it's like barely the same thing as licking your fingers, that kind of tack. It wasn't like caking it on somewhere. But most dudes didn't mind it. Like batters, they didn't care.
Because they were like, at least you're not going to beam me.
Exactly. But there were some guys that were abusing it.
Well, they say they say Bauer was the biggest abuser because his spin rates, which they chart, jumped up significantly.
Yeah,
it was bullfrog sunscreen and pine tar was the mix. And I was always like, why is there so much sunscreen around here? It's a night game.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
Well, those lights, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of UV
guys who wear eye blackets.
Well, and here's the flip side of that, though. You would get baseballs, even in the big leagues, that were terribly put together. Terribly rubbed up.
Yeah.
Maybe they were rubbed up like a week ago.
Yeah.
So all the tack is gone from it. I've gotten a baseball and I'm like, that feels like it's going to slip out of my hand because it's so slick.
It's a watermelon seed.
Yeah.
You pinch it and it's a whoop.
Yeah. Remember Ben Sheets? He would, back in the day, you couldn't lick your fingers while you were on the mound. So he would throw a pitch, he'd walk off the dirt, lick his whole hand or whatever, try to get sweat off, and then go back. And it's like, why is he doing that? Well, he has to do that to make sure he has a good grip because every single ball that he gets is not great.
He didn't have very big hands either. Benny did.
Yeah, small hands smell like cabbage.
Benny was one of my favorite guys. Speaking of training, one year Ben came in. He was never a specimen, right? He was never like, I wouldn't have considered him a great athlete like you, Dilly.
Yeah, I'm
or Brent Suter.
Yeah.
Suter's athletic.
Suter's athletic. Unbelievable.
You guys are athletic, but Ben was never like that. But one year he came in and he had worked out all summer, all winter, and he come in and we could almost see like the hint of an ab. And it's like, you got like a 2-pack or a 3-pack.
What happened?
And he's like, he worked. And then he had never been hurt. And then he got hurt and he said, fuck that, I'm going to be fat from now on because I pitch better when I'm fat. Listen. He didn't like pitching. He had lost 20 pounds, and he's like, I pitch better fat. I'm pitching fat.
God. You cannot pull fat. That is said daily in every clubhouse.
Yes. Now, well, here's the thing, and we talk about training stuff. There are a lot of bullpen guys that, as the season goes on, would put on weight.
Yeah.
And one time, the Brewers, when I was covering the Brewers, they weren't very good. But there was a scout came up to me during BP, and he's like, what's the deal? Do they get to the airport? Do you force feed them bratwursts and beer there? What the fuck? Like, all of them were pretty overweight.
They were stuffing out their uniforms.
But the lifestyle, and especially with relievers, you know, you're having beers, you're eating late, and, like, there were relievers who, they had to do weigh-ins every Sunday, and you'd see guys on Sunday morning running with a 5 sweatsuits and sweating. So they, because they were, you know, there was money involved,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so they had to sweat out.
You could maintain
Saturday
or whatever.
Night. But
yeah,
there were guys that would put on 10 pounds over the course of the season. Right. And now you don't see anybody really like that. There's nobody.
Well, you know, it's almost, and I bet there's a lot of guys that fall in the category of, hey, I want beach muscles. So it's you're lifting and training, not for baseball, but for how you look in a bathing suit.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's nobody specifically that comes to mind, but those guys know who they are and they get hurt and they pull something they've never heard of. And they're like, why is that? It's because you're doing non-specific drills. And people weren't doing this for years. You look at the guys that played 20 years. They probably did very little. Okay. They would go swing a bat. They would go get a giant heavy bat for the offseason, and they would do baseball stuff. They would hit the cage. They'd probably run the bases. They would do very average stuff, maybe some lifting. But nowadays, it's so specific. All right, today I'm going to work on this specific thing. And they blow it out, max it out. It gets bigger and tighter. And then suddenly they're trying to feel a ground ball, and they're so tight they can't.
Alligator arms.
Yeah.
I can't reach
the ball. They can't scratch their back, and they can't feel the ball with frying pans. And you're like, what's going on? You lose that, elastic, I don't know.
That's funny.
Whatever it is, flexibility.
Next one, robo-umps coming next year.
Is it?
Yeah.
Just the tapping thing. If you just have straight-up robot umpires, then it's going to take away from catchers that.
Framing.
Because if you take away the catchers that are framing and making it look good, they're going to go, okay, we'll just go get some catcher that can hit. And all he has to do is flop him back there. And it doesn't matter if he catches
it. Hit him with a stool.
Like this. Yeah. Let him sit on a bucket of balls and just catch. That'll be it. It'll look terrible.
So
I promise you it'll look terrible.
So wait, so it's a challenge system next year, not full
robot. Not full robot. Yeah. It'll be, you can.
But you know, Drew, how replay is gone in all sports. They dip their toe in the
water. They've been using
it
in the minor leagues. They did it in spring training, and it wasn't that onerous because it's pretty quick.
It is pretty
quick.
And
the thing that people don't realize is, what is it, 92%? They get like 92. They've improved it. Angel Hernandez is gone. Like,
yeah,
the idea of you have
Diaz still exists.
There's still some guys, but on balance, you look at it, they're right like 92% of the
time.
But if you miss one with the bases loaded, you miss one that leads to an inning, you guys will. But it works both ways. But those, what, 5 pitches a game?
Yeah. Where you want to get some of the
look
at. You got
to get it right.
Right.
Well, anybody can miss 5. You know.
You missed 2 in a row against one team. That's enough to send the whole game sideways.
Well, there's no doubt.
Because the pitcher's like, you're fucking squeezing me.
Say what you want.
The manager's on the top step.
Say what you want about.
Guys are getting run.
The NHL refs will always even up penalties, right? And basketball refs, we know, like, that dictates a game. If you get a star player with 2 fouls in the NCAA tournament, he's out. But I say no official in sports has more sway over the proceedings and the outcome of the game than the home plate guy, the home plate umpire.
So you guys are both in
because
favor.
Because a 1-1 pitch, if it's 1-2 or 2-1, it's like people don't really, they might not notice, you might not realize it, but if he misses that pitch, it swings the at-bat and it swings the game.
So you're both in favor of it.
I didn't like it at first. I saw it a couple of times in AAA. If they streamline it like they did in spring training where it's like, hey, he's going to challenge the call. They look on the Jumbotron. I messed up. You know, but one thing I did say, since they're not, it's not in effect for this year,
right.
I was like, people are going to get tossed for tapping their hat because
that's
umpires, I know. Yeah. Well, I said
this
that
stupid
like
show.
3 months ago.
Yeah, well, you were ahead of your time.
I was because I know how players are. Because if I'm on the mound and I throw a pitch, I'd be like smacking my hat because I was like that when I was on the mound. I was like, umpire's wrong. We look at the tape. No, Dillard, you're wrong. And I'm like, not going to admit that. Well, we have video evidence.
Then,
like, no, you're stubborn as a
pitcher. Because now you're in TV. The strike zone they superimpose, a lot of times the camera's not dead on center. It's skewed, and that makes me, whoa, how could you miss that? And it's like,
there's some parks.
Really
there's some parks
it.
That are that's very obvious. Like, you'll see an umpire, and if you have, like, the square, like, everything off the plate here is a strike, and everything on the plate here is a ball. then you kind of know, like, that it's just skewed. There's no perfect system to it, which is fine. But if you completely go robots with it,
okay,
it will not look like baseball. It just will not look like baseball.
The pitch clock fixed so much, and I love it because as a writer, four-hour games was brutal. But the strike zone to me, it's the up down. It's not so much the edges, like that's what swings it. But the up down, like they don't call this. It's like they don't. The rule book is the armpits.
Strike, right?
Yeah, the armpit. The letters.
That's what the t-shirt says.
The letters to the hollow of the knee, but they don't call it that way. And that if they had done that years ago, they might not have needed, you know, they might not have needed a pitch clock. They might not have needed the auto robo.
All right, so let's talk pitch clock then.
Oh, fucking love it.
I worked fast, so it would never affect me at all. And we had it in the minor leagues. It didn't bother me. But there's some guys that work slower.
As a broadcaster, it's kind of fucked you guys because you don't have as much time to
That's
get
true. To tell more. Stories.
We do a game, and it's some. There's some games that, you know, we're in the booth, and it's like something happens, and you'd be like, hey, what do you got on that? And be like, oh, this really cool. All right, never mind, three outs. You know, like, it's super quick, which right. I guess I'm okay with, but
I thought year one, it could have been a couple seconds longer. And instead, they went shorter even in year two.
Yeah.
So I didn't get that because I really thought that
I asked
the first pitch clock number, which was what again?
25. Is that what it was?
I thought it was 20. And 20
down
to 18. 18.
Yeah. 18. Yeah. 20 to 18. Now.
Whatever it was, I asked CC Sabathia about it because I know he works for the Yankees. Also works for MLB. Like he talks with Rob Manfred about all these stuff that they talk about, which should make everyone feel better that you have CC Sabathia helping sway Commissioner Manfred. So he was just talking about, like, you know, everybody responded well. We don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. I was surprised they dropped it down lower, honestly, because you have guys like Kenley Jansen. I mean, I guess Kimbrel, you know, maybe not so much, but there was guys in the league that would take their time, and that's what they're used to.
Yeah.
Now you're coming in going, you can't do that. It's like, start at the minor leagues, and then you're going to have a generation. Just be patient. Have a generation of guys that will be able to – you won't even need the clock. In 10 years, if the minor league clock does its due diligence, you won't even need this in the big
in
leagues.
Theory.
In
theory.
I love it.
Because, you know, it got out of hand because the players and the pitchers and the batters were abusing it. Next thing you know, a Yankee-Red Sox game is going 4 hours, 38 minutes, and you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That's it. That was on purpose, though. If you look at the 90s and what the Red Sox and Yankees did, they played the longest games. They saw the most pitches than anybody. They had the oldest, you know, average for their offense. Like, that's what they were. That was all they're built around. And to counteract that, the bullpen people, I was part of these bullpen, we'd have these meetings, and they're like, hey, take a step off. I heard Trevor Hoffman talking about
that.
Hey, you don't feel comfortable with the pitch, feel comfortable with the situation, step off, gather your thoughts, whatever you got to do to refocus, look around, suck it all in, breathe, get back on the rubber, and you're not able to do that in the amounts that you used to.
What about the disengagements? Because you were pretty good at holding runners.
I remember
you were holding you held runners pretty good, but the disengagement rule, a lot of people thought that would lead to a spike in stolen bases. And there are more attempts now. But then teams come through, like the Padres don't run. It's all managers. Like a lot of guys are Billy Bean type, like, why would we give up an out on the bases? Let's not do it. The Brewers, the last couple of years, like last year with Murph, when you don't hit home runs, you got to steal bags.
Right.
You got to capture bases, right?
Yeah.
So how are you with disengagements and limiting that? Did that change things as pitchers that I can only throw over, I can only step off so many times?
I mean, I never really picked over. Most pitchers do not pick over.
Oh, thanks.
Don't pick over to, like, actually pick somebody out off. They really just do that to maybe disengage. Maybe they want a different pitch. Some guys have it. Lefties have good moves. Like, they'll pick a guy off. But usually it's just keep them close. Hey, I know you're there. Quick story. I remember in AAA, we were facing the Omaha Storm Chasers, maybe. We were in Colorado Springs, AAA, and I was starting the game, and no one had reached base until they're like their biggest first baseman. Guy's like 300 pounds. He's over at first, and I'm just looking over there, like, come set. And I snap pick to first. This guy's 6 inches off of first base. Everyone's looking at me like, what in the world?
6 inches.
And I end up, maybe I struck the guy out, and then later on, I picked again. Everyone's like, this is stupid. This guy has not stolen a base since he was in, you know, 8 years old. You know?
He couldn't steal a base and he broke into the ballpark at
like,
3 in the morning.
All these guys, I come in the dugout, and like everybody, even some of the coaches were like, why are you picking over on this guy? I said, you want to know why? I was like, if I'm going to stay in this game a long time, I want to show that speedy center fielder that's batting ninth, I want to show that if I'm willing to hold this guy on base, you better believe I'm going to.
This guy is crazy.
Exactly. And so some guys just want you to make you think like, hey, I'm looking at you. Maybe that keeps them a step closer, but the guys that are fast are going to steal their bases, and they're going to steal them on the pitcher because you have to be quick to the plate. But again, with the pitch clock and trying to gather yourself and throw, it's really hard to be quick to the plate. So you're seeing a lot of guys take advantage of relievers because they're like max effort.
And these guys don't want to slide step. They don't want to do, they don't bury it up. What was your time to the plate generally?
Well, after I went from catching to pitching when I was in high school, I was like 1 second to the plate. Like I'd come set and I just would fall, get my arm out and throw. And I got to pro baseball and they're like, don't do that.
Don't do that.
They're like, you gotta have a little like, load and go, you know, and it helped with velocity, but like you, like a knee to knee or slide step or whatever you want to call it. You have to gather a little bit, but it's a difference between a high leg kick where you're giving this guy a chance to run that far.
Right.
And it's a conversation. Hey, I know Corbin Burns, I'll use him because he had a lot of guys steal on him a couple years ago, but he's different. He was an outlier at that time. He's like, steal second, I'm gonna strike this guy out. Steal third, I'm gonna strike this guy out. And he would. So what are you gonna say to that guy?
That
hey, I need you to hold runners better. Why? I don't care who's
like,
out there.
Guys that were like 1.6, 1.7 back in the day, they would going.
Right? Yeah.
That's the longer
lineup. So you just kind of make them think. But for the most part, runners, I mean, they're gonna steal it off the pitcher, but if the pitcher gives catchers a chance, there's so many good catchers out there right now that can just throw bullets, because that's all they work on, right? They're good.
Pop time and arm swing.
Pop time.
You've been great with your time, Tim, and your family has left, so I don't want you to lose your family. So
left?
Yes.
Did
they leave a forwarding address?
They left the car key.
Yeah.
So there's that at least.
Yeah.
So I'll just end on this, and it's a big topic, so you'll have a little bit of time to elaborate. And Drew, you're going to weigh in on this. I know as a non-native what the Brewers mean to this city, and I also know what Euchre meant to the Brewers and the community. And those are two special things. Tell me what the Brewers mean to Milwaukee and about Euchre's impact on everything.
I will defer to Tim because he played here and was in it. You know.
I mean, when I got drafted by the Brewers, I was like, the Brewers, you know? Like, I figured maybe it was Red Sox or Cubs, like that or something like that. So I got with the Brewers and quickly realized, I mean, just for me with the coaching staff, player development, I'm like, this is a special place. I've never been a part of something like this. And then finally getting to the big leagues, talking to the fan base, not doing very well on the mound. Fast forward 20 years, here I am, and people are still like, hey, I saw you pitch that time, or hey, blah, blah, blah. They're smart fans, they know baseball.
Yeah.
That's why, I mean, they're booing Manny Machado, and they're booing him for a pretty good reason. Manny Machado's not the same guy as he was when he ran over Aguilar at first.
Right.
He's not the same guy, but he did do that. And these fans don't forget.
Yes.
You can't say that about
all fans. It was 2018, and he's still wearing it here.
Hell yeah.
But you can't say that about all fan bases. There's some that have no idea what's going on in the game. I would say, per square inch, these Brewers fans know what's going on. They're passionate about it, and they care. I love that, because my wife, who she's not here anymore, so I can say, as long as I played in the minor leagues, almost 20 years, she was there all the time, when good and the bad, the indifferent. And there were times I'm like, why don't we do this? And she's like, Tim, you just care too much.
Wow.
You just care too much. And when I talk about this kind of stuff with the Brewers fans, I realize they care too much, just like I do. And I love that about them.
Well, they care too much because I hear pitching on our radio station, Drew, about the team. And the team, I think, has never been run more nimbly.
Oh,
or
yeah.
More
no doubt.
This is astutely.
Oh, nimbly.
Nimbly and simply with what resources they have.
You can make a case that this is the golden age
of
baseball.
These are arguably like, from the golden days.
When I remember waiting for the cavalry to come, like Ricky Weeks, Prince Fielder, or Corey Hart, or Ryan Braun, like those guys that we were waiting for.
That was arrived. A great phase.
And then it took them a while to get, you know, their feet under them, and then they started off to the races. And now we're in another wave of that with the Chirio. Wait till you see what Mate and these guys can do, like the guys that are coming behind Chirio. are going to be special. But there's this fatalism, like, as much as they love the team, they know they've never won a World Series, and it's like, there's this, like, we can't, we're just going to go to the playoffs and lose to the Dodgers.
We're going to die without a World Series.
And so there's this, as much as they love the team, the conflict comes because they want to be the first in their block to say, they can't win, I'm out. They lose three in a row. It's like, season's over, fire everybody.
Oh, yeah, they were 500 earlier in May, and it was like.
And Murphy should go, because he's like an idiot. Like, what are you talking, like, what are you watching?
But would you let the season play out? Let's get to July 4th.
Baseball is advanced citizenship. You got to work it. You got to earn it. To be a fan of baseball, you have to realize that. I always say, like, look at it in 10-game blocks. Don't think about what happens. You're going to have ugly days. You're going to have pathetic series. You're going to lose to the freaking Rockies. Like, it's going to – that's part of the game, right?
I love it.
And it's because I've spent so much of my adult life talking to guys like Tim and players. It's shaped my opinion that you laugh at. But the guys who – our buddy Tim Allen, who does the post-game show in Milwaukee – every game is the biggest game of the season. I can't believe this loss. It's like, dude, it's June. Get over it. It's
why is Tim that way? He should know better.
Because he lives it. He represents.
He cares too much.
But he cares too much. And he represents a section of the fan base. Yeah. But with Euchre, like, he was everything. He was the face of the franchise. Like, there were so many days when we talking about getting off the bus. Like, I would get off the bus in that Yankee Stadium, right? They'd be lined up, and they had, like, the barricades, and there were people lined up, and they're used to the Red Sox coming in or people that they know, and they'd be like, you know, Brewers suck. They couldn't name a single player on the Brewers. And then Euchre would get off the bus and say, Bob, hey, Euchre, hey, Mr. Belvedere, hey. And he was like, the place would go nuts, and he would milk it, and it was beautiful.
It was beautiful.
Because they didn't know, because then they would realize that the second bus was the media bus. And they'd be like, Brewers suck. And somebody would say, that's the media bus. Media sucks.
Yeah.
And then they'd see you. And he was always in the front row. And he'd get off and they'd be like, Bobby! Everywhere we went, it was unbelievable. And his impact here, you just can't even. There's Scully. There's Harwell. Like, a lot of cities are lucky enough to have that guy who's embodies the fan base and the franchise. But the fact that he's from here. How many guys broadcast in the city they grew up in? And he was the first Milwaukee player to play for the Braves. First Milwaukee player to get cut by the Braves or released by the Braves. It's such a loss. You feel it. We feel it around the ballpark. And I don't know if that'll go away. You know, I imagine it will over time. But still this year, every time you're, you know.
I don't even know if you want it to go away, you know. Like, he will be quoted in every clubhouse now into the end of time.
That's right.
It's just,
but in the Brewers clubhouse, though, you know, he was like a player. And everybody who says that, he was one of us. He had a locker. He was there every day. He would come and swim, and he would get his workout in, and then shower, and then. But he was with the guys, and they didn't start celebrating and spraying beer and champagne until he got down from the booth.
Wow!
Like, the playoff celebrations. He was.
And he was. They gave him there a. Too, by
they
the
gave
way,
him a playoff share.
With the ski goggles and everything.
Yeah, doing the lawnmower thing. They gave him a full playoff share, which he then quickly donated to charity. But I've seen how cheap these players are when it comes to giving out money. You know, doling out playoff shares. The guys almost come to blows about that, but Euchre got a full share, which he donated. Like, that is the measure. Can't put a value on it. Like, he was the franchise. He meant everything. Everything.
So, great conversation, boys. Cheers to baseball and to summer in Milwaukee.
Let's do it.
Thank you, Tim Dillard.
You got it.
Drew, I'll see you back in the rock pile.
Indeed. Let's go. Let's have a summer.
Let's have a summer.
Cheers.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Watching any sport is a hell of a lot more exciting when you got a little something-something riding on the game. But what happens when the season is over? And my bookie, there is no offseason. NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, boxing, heck, table tennis, MMA, and more. If they got it, you can bet it. If the games are being played, the line is on the board at MyBookie. Just remember, where you bet, though, is every bit as important, if not more so than what you're betting on. That's why I tell all my friends to go to MyBookie.ag. Oh, but my state just approved it. There's a big whatever, or these guys are in the market. Nah. Johnny come latelys. You want to trust them? Trust the bookie I've been working with for years, MyBookie. MyBookie has been ahead of the game for years now. And why does it matter? Oh, I don't know. Maybe a million reasons. Better lines, better payouts, less rules, you name it. Plus, you get a bonus with me at MyBookie.ag. Use promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo. That's promo code ZABE. And get your deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That's a free cash bonus for making your deposit. Use promo code ZABE to claim the offer. You bet, you win, and most importantly, you get paid with MyBookie.ag.